The Manchurian Candidate, Jonathan Demme's remake of the gripping political thriller from 1962, opens today in theaters. Denzel Washington plays Ben Marco, a Gulf War veteran plagued by disturbing dreams. Liev Schreiber plays Raymond Shaw, another member of Marco's unit during the Gulf War, who is now an up-and-coming young congressman from New York. And Meryl Streep plays Shaw's ambitious mother, Eleanor, whose husband Johnny, Shaw's stepfather, is also running for office, the office of president. The original movie, made in the aftermath of the McCarthy-era witch hunts and in the early volatile years of the Cold War, starred Frank Sinatra as the troubled Marco, the role now played by Denzel. Lawrence Harvey is war hero Raymond Shaw, and Angela Lansbury is Shaw's mother. The movie was directed by John Frankenheimer, who died in 2002 at age 72. Let's get a taste of the original. In this scene, Raymond Shaw, played by Lawrence Harvey, is touring his stepfather Johnny's new campaign plane. Angela Lansbury, as Shaw's mother, is showing off the plane, but her son doesn't intend to stay on it.
I'm not going home with you, Mother. I'm going to New York.
What?
I've got a job in a newspaper. Research assistant to Mr. Hoban Gaines.
Hoban Gaines? That communist?
He's not a communist, Mother. As a matter of fact, he's a Republican.
But the terrible things he's written about Johnny.
He came to interview me at the White House this morning. Afterwards, I asked him for a job. He gave it to me. We discovered that we had a great deal in common.
What could you possibly have in common with that dreadful old man?
Well, for one thing, we discovered that we both loathe and despise you and Johnny. And that's the beginning.
John Frankenheimer started his career in TV in the 1950s, directing such golden age TV dramas as the classic Days of Wine and Roses for Playhouse 90. His films included The Birdman of Alcatraz, 7 Days in May, French Connection 2, Black Sunday, and, more recently, Ronin and Reindeer Games. Terry spoke with Frankenheimer in 1990.
There's a scene I have to ask you about. It's really an extraordinary scene. This is the Garden Club dream scene. Frank Sinatra is having these recurring nightmares in which he's with all of the men from his army troop from the Korean War. He's with them at a ladies' garden club, and suddenly the ladies' garden club turns into a lot of Korean soldiers, and the head Korean soldier is discussing how he's brainwashing these soldiers into believing that they're at a garden party. And then to show how brainwashed they really are, he has Lawrence Harvey just walk over and strangle to death one of the men. You shot that scene in such a disorienting way. The camera just kind of revolves around all the women of the garden club first, and then suddenly the women are transformed into men, and you're as confused as Frank Sinatra is by all of this. Tell me about how you decided to shoot this scene.
Well, number one, the idea of the scene came right out of Richard Condon's book. He described pretty well what the scene should look like. So it was up to me to interpret it. And the shot that you're talking about is a 360-degree shot, which starts on the stage of a hotel in New Jersey where a woman is talking about hydrangeas, and we pan around the room, and you think that it's just women listening to this, a garden club. And then as the camera completes its 360-degree arc, you suddenly find yourself on a stage in an amphitheater in Korea, and the Chinese psychiatrist is talking about brainwashing. So what we did was we designed a set that could be moved, and it took a little athletic ability from the actors to run from one platform to the other while we were back on the garden club. And the two platforms were on a kind of a railroad track, and we slid one right in place as the camera moved off the first one. But what it did was it set in the audience's mind that this was not just the magic of the movies, that something very strange here was happening, because we never cut. And the audience realizes when you cut. They might not know what it is, but they know that there's been some mechanical device put between them and the story. And I wanted to do it all in one shot. And I think after we accomplished that shot, then we were able to cut to anything that we wanted to do. And we filmed that sequence with about 7 or 8 different combinations. The women in Korea, the Chinese Manchurian delegates in New Jersey, the actors on the New Jersey stage hotel, the actors in the Korean amphitheater. And we were able to intercut it at will, back and forth. And after the first shot, the suspension of disbelief with the audience was complete. So we were able to kind of manipulate them back and forth whenever we wanted to. And you're right, we did cut it in such a way that it was confusing, and deliberately so.
Now, one of the black men from this same troop that Sinatra was in has the same dream. But when he has the dream, all of the women from the ladies' club are black. Was that in the novel, or is that your invention, to have the two people have their own version of this same dream?
That was me. What I never did do, I had it done, but I just didn't dare take the shot of it. In the back of the room, we had a white bellboy. But we never did show it. If you look carefully, you can see it.
That's great. It's a wonderful... It's wonderful the way you contrast the two dreams.
You know, I want to tell you one other thing about that movie. That's something that I don't think people are aware of, but I think it's important to say in these days and times, which is that that was one of the first movies where the producer and director used a black actor to play a part that was not written for a black.
Uh-huh.
Today it's done quite often, but that was very new at the time, to take the black actor, cast him as the psychiatrist. And that part was not written for a black actor. I've since done it quite a bit, but I just wanted to bring that up.
You were the co-producer of the movie. I assume that means that you were one of the people who were behind making it, as opposed to a director who was brought on after the idea.
Yes,
was already in
yes. In this particular case, George Axelrod and I bought the book. We developed it, and then I ended up directing it, of course.
How did Sinatra get involved with the movie?
Well, Sinatra was the whole element that made the movie possible. The movie had been turned down by every studio in town. And when George Axelrod and I bought the book, we bought it by buying the book in a bookstore. It had been optioned and reoptioned and dropped and never been able to be made. And we knew that Frank Sinatra had read the book and Frank Sinatra was interested in the picture, but he had never really gone the whole nine yards and optioned it. So we optioned it, and without a script, Frank Sinatra committed to it. And, of course, right away, as soon as he committed to it, we had the necessary financing to make the movie.
Did you have any idea he'd be as good as he was in it? I mean, did you have as much faith in his acting abilities when you started?
No. I didn't want to make the movie with Frank Sinatra. I was scared of it. I had heard he was very difficult. I had heard that he treated directors badly, all those things. I expressed these reservations to George Axelrod, and I'm going to make the movie with Frank Sinatra, whether you do it or whether you don't. He said, I'll buy you out, but I want to make this movie with Sinatra. Sinatra's going to get this picture made. And if you have problems with Sinatra, he said, I would suggest that you discuss them with him instead of discussing them with me. And I made an appointment to see Mr. Sinatra. I went up to see him at his house, and I expressed my reservations to him. And he said, look, I guarantee you, whether what you've heard is true, whether what you've heard is not true, there is my side to all that, too. He said, I want to do this picture, I want to work with you, and I feel that we're going to get along just fine. And that was the last discussion we ever had. We got along absolutely fabulously. I loved working with Frank Sinatra.
You've done several films about the military, 7 Days in May, The Manchurian Candidate. You went to military school as a child, right?
Yes, it's true.
Did you feel like that gave you insights into the military mind at all?
Yes, I do. And I also was a lieutenant in the Air Force, and I was General LeMay's personal photographer during the Korean War and things like that. And yes, I do. I feel that it's given me a tremendous insight into the military mind, especially on higher levels, because I was around general officers a lot. And it's helped me.
When you were General LeMay's personal photographer during the Korean War, what did that entail?
Well, it entailed photographing the general quite a bit. It entailed...
Right.
It entailed also doing some training films. I was in the Air Photographic Squadron that did a lot of training films in the United States. That's how I started, actually.
Started making movies.
Yeah.